playing at the Mission Theater on Thursday, April 23rd at 8 p.m. There's also some other bands coming to Portland, but we're going to talk about some upcoming events and then probably just be off to Tom Hartman.
Yeah, it's about that time.
We're short on time today. And you are listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY Portland at 91.1 and 107.1 FM. And in Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM, streaming online everywhere at xray.fm, where radio is yours. So, the 1st of May is in, about 11 days. This is going to be May Day, or International Workers' Day, which is historically a day of action for immigrant rights advocates, labor, and socialists, and is shaping up to be a powerful day here in Portland. There are a lot of activities planned all over the city and most especially downtown. May Day Strong is an organization that is calling for a day for working people across the nation to take a personal day, if they can, to not shop and to skip school to show our power. So that will be May 1st once again. We also have a event with Recycled Living coming up this week. Julia, would you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so Recycled Living is partnering with We Shine to help rebuild a transitional housing community that houses people experiencing houselessness. The tiny homes at the Park Rose Microvillage have been around for 5 years, but they need to be rebuilt because of some leaking and water damage. The kickoff demolition is Saturday, April 25th at 10 a.m., and they will be deconstructing, repurposing, and recycling materials from 10 tiny homes to use in the construction of the new village. You can go to Meetup to RSVP for this event. They will be cutting off roofs, ripping up floorboards, and removing windows and doors and recycling some of those pieces. And then Recycled Living is going to be part of putting those homes back together, which is pretty cool.
Very cool. Shout out to Charlie for doing great work with Recycled Living. What else do we have? The adaptive bikes?
Applications are open today.
Okay, so this is specifically, so there's an e-bike rebate program, and the applications for adaptive bikes are also now open.
Yes.
They have three options, right? They have standard, cargo, and adaptive.
Yep.
Okay. Right on. Pretty exciting. Also, Earth Day is in 2 days. It's going to be on Wednesday, April 22nd. Make sure and hold some big love for our mama.
Yes.
And yeah, I think that's all the events that we got.
Yep.
I hope you have a great week. We're going to play us out with a song by Lebanon Hanover. This song is called The Last Thing. They are going to be playing in town as well this week. They're going to be playing at... They're going to be playing at the Crystal Ballroom on Wednesday, April 22nd. So here's that. And have a great Monday. We'll see you next week.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey, top of the brand new week to you, a brand new opportunity to educate the world, save the planet, wake people up, get ready for the end of the fascist regime and the rebuilding of America. I really think of my job that way, honest to God. All right, here we got a lot to talk about today. Is this what Trump meant by my way? Power, control, darkness. Yeah, he's posting Frank Sinatra's song. Well, we'll get into that in a minute. Also, is the White House about to crash and burn? And is Vance going to stab Trump in the back to save himself? Inquiring minds want to know. We'll talk about those things in the first hour. In the second hour of our program, our one guest for the day, Dr. Michael Mann, our old friend, one of the world's leading climate scientists, is going to drop by. Hotter summers, double El Nino, the great conveyor belt dying. What's going on? And why are middle-aged Americans falling apart when you compare us to European middle-aged citizens? We'll get into that. And Trump tries to pin a Medal of Honor on himself. Oh. And in the third hour of our program, the insider trading suspicions looming over Trump's presidency. And could 2 minutes a day really save your life? So we have a lot to talk about today. My op-ed today over at HartmanReport.com is titled, my daily take is titled, Is This What Trump Meant by My Way? Power, Control, Darkness, and Evil. You know, it feels like there's a darkness that has spread across America during these two Trump presidencies. It was grim when George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were lying us into a war with Iraq, Iraq and Afghanistan. It was tough when Nixon and Johnson were lying to us about the war in Vietnam. But it's particularly bad under Trump because he literally lies to us every day, and now he's like blowing up the world. They've got these, we're going to send, a couple of real estate guys who know nothing about international negotiation, have no experience working in government, and know nothing about nuclear physics. Keep in mind, Obama had two nuclear physicists negotiate the JCPOA. We're going to send them off to Pakistan to meet with the Iranians, and the Iranians are like, you've done that twice, and each time while we were in the middle of talks and offering you really real concessions in good faith, you bombed the crap out of us. Don't plan on us showing up. And by the way, we've closed the Straits of Hormuz again because you lied about the... So anyway, here we are. So we've got this darkness, and it's being noticed all over the world, from the Pope to leaders of our formerly allied nations, and it's being embraced by people like Putin and MBS. How did we get here? The most corrupt Supreme Court justice in the history of America, Clarence Thomas... who was literally taking millions from in money and gifts, from billionaires. One bought his mother's house and a couple houses down the block to clean up the neighborhood, put his son through school, or his adopted son, or whatever, sort of son. Anyhow, last week, Clarence Thomas, the most corrupt Supreme Court justice in American history, gave a speech at the University of Texas in Austin. And he said... The problems of America, and in fact, the problems of the world, are the result of progressivism. He blamed progressives for the rise of Hitler, Stalin, Mao. He blamed progressives for racial segregation, for the eugenics movement that, by the way, Hitler borrowed from America and Great Britain for his final solution. What Thomas is doing here in blaming progressives for all the ills of the world is what Joseph Goebbels recommended famously. He said, accuse the other side of that which you are guilty. The modern version of this is every accusation is a confession. My dad, back in the, when I was a kid in the 1950s and 60s, my dad was a conservative. He called himself a conservative. He was an Eisenhower conservative. And he explained to me that meant that you don't radically or rapidly change society you know, unless it's necessary, like the American Revolution. But generally speaking, you don't rapidly or radically change society. You do it in incremental steps, and you measure the success of each one of those steps before you go on to the next one, you know, conservatively. And that's how my dad explained it to me. That's how Dwight Eisenhower explained it to his brother Edgar in 1957 when he wrote him a letter saying there's some fossil fuel billionaires who think that you can end Social Security and unemployment insurance and farm supports. Their numbers are small and they're stupid. And it's how Richard Nixon described it when in 1971 in his State of the Union address he said, we are all Keynesians now. In other words, Nixon was embracing the New Deal. He was saying, yeah, we're okay with unions and we're okay with, you know, being legal and we're okay with you know, a minimum wage and we're okay with Social Security and all these things that the Republicans today are trying to do away with. And that's because today's modern conservative movement is not Nixon or Eisenhower or my dad's conservative movement. Instead, it is a fascist movement, pure and simple. Or arguably, you could call it neo-fascism. It's reactionary. It is, and the reactionary, what it's reacting to is the New Deal. What Clarence Thomas trash-talked. So where did this all start? Well, this all started back in 1954 when the Supreme Court overturned its Plessy versus Ferguson separate but equal decision from 1898, overturned that in 1954, Brown versus Board of Education. And Fred Koch, this fossil fuel billionaire who made his money in the Soviet Union, went nuts. Oh, my God, you want black kids to sit next to my white children in public school? Of course, his kids never went to public school anyway. But anyhow, he hooked up with the John Birch Society and started funding billboards all across America that said, impeach Earl Warren. Now, the impeachment never happened, but the John Birch Society grew like crazy. My dad introduced me to them. He said, you've got to hear what these crazies are saying. That was in the late 50s, early 60s, in fact. Anyway, and what happened was the John Birch Society, which had, you know, started out as this anti-communist thing in the 40s and 50s, but then, you know, really got their mojo going on the Brown versus Board of Education thing. The John Birch Society then said, oh, well, let's take this a step farther. We not only need to end Brown v. Board, reverse Brown v. Board, but we need to end all of these progressive programs that benefit poor people. Because in the minds of the all-white John Birch Society, poor people was black people. And Reagan rode that racist message to victory in 1981, you know, his first speech in Philadelphia, Mississippi, talking about states' rights and all that kind of thing. And Clarence Thomas, of course, worked for Reagan back then. So, you know, basically this is when the Republican Party got taken over, is with the Reagan era, by these fascists. And the problem that they had was that their agenda was very unpopular. And so to push it through, they had to tell a whole series of lies. This is the most audacious BS series since the Horse and Sparrow Day of the late 1890s, the last Gilded Age. They said that tax cuts for billionaires would trickle down to workers, that unions hurt and rip off their members, that regulations stunt economic growth and thus kill jobs, that Social Security is growing broke, that free trade will lift all boats, that for-profit schools and prisons do a better job, that America can't afford a national health care system, that corporations are persons and thus have rights under the Bill of Rights, that giving millions to a politician or a president isn't bribery, it's free speech, that when young people get college for free, they don't value it, that more CO2 is good for plants and climate change is a hoax, that government isn't the solution to our problems, it's the problem itself, and that corporate monopolies increase efficiency and thus are a good thing. And once it got up and running, it just kind of took on its own momentum because all these other billionaires jumped into it. And now this led us directly to a fully corrupted Republican Party owned by neo-fascist billionaires, forming alliances with other neo-fascist billionaire leaders like Viktor Orban and Vladimir Putin and MBS and many of the other Middle Eastern guys. And now Trump is threatening to start World War III. I mean, this all brought us Donald Trump, 100% of it. You know, they built out this right-wing media infrastructure and everything else, and here we are. But I think the important point, and Pope Leo XIV nailed this, even though he said he wasn't specifically talking about Trump when he said the world is being ravaged by a handful of tyrants. The thing that this is, number one, not conservatism. And number two, this new one man above all ideology is not only fascism, it's raw, naked evil. And Democrats need to start calling it that.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your calls in just a moment. And welcome back. Stan in Los Angeles. Hey, Stan, what's on your mind today?
Oh, boy, what's on my mind is really a big deal. Last week when we spoke and you said, I'll give you 20 minutes to tell me about Stun and what they're
Seconds.
Up to. And what happened was, because I've always been contacting them and they put my stuff online, they got right back to me and they said, listen, if you can talk to him, we have some things for you to say to him. You'll be our spokesman. And I said, oh, okay. So they sent me this. And what they said to begin with was to let people know what they're really up to. And what they're really up to is Paine's quote about, when it shall be said in any country in the world, my poor are happy, neither ignorance nor distress is to be found among them. My jails are empty of prisoners, my streets empty of beggars. The aged are not in want, the taxes are not oppressive. The rational world is my friend. I am friend of its happiness. When these things can be said, then can that country boast of its constitution. So we're certainly not there. But anyhow, here are the four things that they said to get across. That unity is the first thing. And unity is going to happen through communication, just like with you and your show, Pacific Foundation, all of you programmers. And that each of us has a right to equal say of whatever we do. The second thing they said, don't put this one out yet. Go to three. Okay, so here's three. Reformation such that we, the 21st century people, begin our nation anew with the demand that each who participates in this reformation process is a commitment to nonviolence. Four, an invitation to everyone interested in a unified, nonviolent United States nation to express whatever input that might aid in reaching that nonviolent unified plateau. Now, here's number two that we skipped over. It's we, the people, begin the process of legally, constitutionally removing from office our current elected executive officer. And they didn't say how they're going to do it, but they say next time we talk, they will let you know how to do it. And they say to you that something that you said, a couple of things actually. One of them was that when you presented the Constitution, Article 3, Section 4, see, if we rid ourselves of Trump, all of his administration goes.
That's
all
not
of
true.
His people go.
That's not true.
Well, that's how that can be interpreted. Okay, so if
it's
that's
just,
not true, we'll,
yeah, it's
we'll
just
go
not,
to it.
It's just not
we'll
the
get,
case.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
But anyhow, and there was one other thing, and I can't remember what it was. I had it written down, but I don't remember. Anyhow, that's what they're up to.
Stan, this still sounds like gibberish to me. This sounds like the kind of stuff that I used to hear out of this political cult out of New York that Bob Avakian was running. That, you know, we all need to unify around me.
Yeah.
We need a revolution on my ideas.
Yeah. Yeah.
And by the way, I can't tell you the secret strategy that we have, but follow me.
No. They're going to put it forth. But the other thing is, have your people go to PASOIR.com.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not going to promote a website that I don't agree with. Or that I don't understand, I guess. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with more of the news of the day and your call. Stick around. Missed my opening rant today? It's usually published over at HartmanReport.com, where you can read it and share it with your friends for free. Check it out, HartmanReport.com. So every time we have an election, I mean, most recently we saw this in 2022, Putin and Mohammed bin Salman, Russia and Saudi Arabia, start raising the price of oil, basically to stick it to the Democrats, hoping that they can lose power. I mean, it worked in 2022. They got their majority in the House of Representatives. And you'll recall all those $6 gasoline and $5 gasoline, and everybody squealing about it, and the little stickers they were putting on pumps with pictures of Joe Biden saying, I did this. Well, they're preparing to do it again. They've cut production, Saudi Arabia and Russia, and it's going to get a whole lot worse over the course of the next year as we're heading toward 2024. So what can we do about this? Well, I have a very specific proposal, and by the way, 70 different environmental groups have joined in this, along with Senator Ed Markey and several members of Congress, and that is to ban the export of American-produced crude oil. Make America energy independent, and we control the price. There's a piece about it over at HartmanReport.com. Check it out. Say what? Oh, welcome back. 22 minutes past the hour. Is the White House about to crash and burn? The panic inside Trump's inner circle is real. Politico is reporting the strategists close to the president are terrified that rising gas prices are going to wipe out Republicans this November. One source warned, quote, if we don't see the $3 gallon of gas, we're going to get killed, end quote. You know, since Trump launched his war on Iran on February 28th, the average gallon of gas has jumped more than a dollar. That's the biggest monthly spike since tracking began in 1967 under Lyndon Johnson. Gas is now $4.05 a gallon. Trump's own energy secretary, Chris Wright, admitted Sunday that prices might not drop below $3 until 2027. Iran's partial closure of the Strait of Hormuz is choking off a fifth of the world's oil supply. And working families are paying for Trump's war of choice. They're going to remember this in November. I think this is a really big deal. I mean, this, you know, Trump is now saying, oh, yeah, we're going to have these negotiations in Pakistan. We're going to send people over to Islamabad. They're going to get together with us. Everything's going to be fine. Don't you worry. In the third hour of the program, I'm going to talk about how when Trump comes out and says things that he knows will move markets, right, that will either drive them up, like, hey, everything's great, you know, we're gonna resolve this, or we're gonna have a peace deal, or move them down, where he says things like, you know, I'm gonna, you know, end Iranian civilization. That there's these huge trades that precede them. So, you know, the question is, Trump like flailing, or is he trying to manipulate markets? I mean, what's really going on here? And how is this going to play out? It sure looks to me like this White House is crashing and burning. Like Trump is just, you know, this piece in the Wall Street Journal, I read it over the weekend. It came out, I think, on Saturday. Maybe it was Friday afternoon. Reporting from inside the Oval Office that Trump was running around literally screaming at his staff, trying to blame Europe and NATO when that pilot, you know, went down over Iran. So where's it going? I don't know, but it's a mess. Also, is Vance going to stab Trump in the back to save himself? J.D. Vance is cornered. I mean, The Guardian's Simon Tisdale writes that the vice president's poll numbers are cratering, and his 2028 hopes for the presidency are crumbling. Tisdale calls Vance a, quote, crude opportunist, a self-proclaimed hillbilly peddling political moonshine. But Vance has one card left to play. Trump can't fire an elected vice president. But under the 25th Amendment, Vance can fire Trump. I mean, you need a little help, right, the cabinet. But actually, the 25th Amendment says it doesn't have to be the cabinet. It can be a group designated by Congress that does this with the vice president. So a group of congressional Democrats now want Vance to join a commission that Congress is going to create that could do that exactly that if Trump is judged unfit. They could remove him from office. Tisdale says Vance will bide his time, but Trump's Iran fiasco and the unhinged behavior are eroding support for Trump, and that hurts Vance in his hopes to become president in 3 years. Vance's lead over Marco Rubio for the 2028 nomination keeps slipping. And, you know, when sycophants start plotting escape routes, you can tell the regime is rotting from the inside. And that's pretty much where we're at right now. I mean, J.D. Vance, this is the guy's got just an amazing story, right? He writes a book. He grows up in a middle-class suburb in was Cincinnati or Cleveland. I mix those cities up all the time, in Ohio. His mom is a nurse, and she's stealing narcotics from the hospital and gets addicted to them. He's got cousins who are literally hillbillies. So he writes a book basically trash-talking the hillbillies and starts giving talks claiming that his mom was like a drug addict, like she was buying street drugs, when in fact she was stealing them. And Peter Thiel, this right-wing billionaire from South Africa via Germany, or the other way around, decides to turn him into a senator, runs him against... first of all, makes him rich, helps him set up a hedge fund, then runs him against Sherrod Brown for senator from Ohio, and then basically twists Trump's arm and says, make him vice president. So now he's the singular toady of a right-wing billionaire who has said that he thinks that democracy and the free market or whatever are incompatible. So here we are. What a mess. What's going to happen to Vance? Will he go along with this? Be interesting to keep an eye
on. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
So what's on your mind? 27 minutes past the hour. I'll pick up your calls right after this. Snubs Trump's genocide threat. Gas prices gut the GOP. Vance eyes the 25th. Trump wants his own medal. Middle age cracks, and 2 minutes saves lives. Good morning. This is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. Sign up for free. AM and PM News at commonwealthreport.news. Iran tells Trump to shove it after a genocide threat. Iran isn't playing Trump's game anymore. After the president threatened Sunday to blow up the whole country of 90 million people if they don't sign a deal by Wednesday, Iranian officials said they won't negotiate with an erratic leader. One official said Trump, quote, lacks both a coherent plan and the capacity to secure even a temporary deal. Trump claimed Iranian negotiators were flying to Islamabad today to meet with J.D. Vance, Jared Kushner, and Steve Witkoff. Iran's state news agency called that a media game. Threatening to bomb civilians and demolish infrastructure is a genocidal threat from the United States president and a war crime. Just the threat is a war crime. 67% of Americans disapprove of Trump's handling of the war. When a president threatens mass murder to save face, which is a war crime, democracy itself hangs in the balance. Is the White House about to crash and burn? The panic inside Trump's inner circle is real. Politico reports strategists close to the president are terrified rising gas prices will wipe out Republicans come November. One source warned, quote, if we don't see the $3 gallon of gas, we're going to get killed. Since Trump launched the war on Iran in February 28th, the average gallon has jumped more than a dollar. That's the biggest monthly spike since tracking began in 1967 under Lyndon Johnson. Gas is now $4.05 a gallon nationwide. Trump's own energy secretary, Chris Wright, admitted Sunday that prices might not drop below $3 until 2027. Iran's partial closure of the Strait of Hormuz is choking off a fifth of the world's oil supplies. Working families are paying for Trump's war of choice. They're going to remember in November. Will Vance stab Trump in the back to save himself? J.D. Vance is cornered. The Guardian's Simon Tisdale writes, the vice president's poll numbers are cratering, and his 2028 hopes are crumbling. Tisdale calls Vance a, quote, crude opportunist, a self-proclaimed hillbilly peddling political moonshine, end quote. But Vance has one card left to play. Trump can't fire an elected vice president. Under the 25th Amendment, Vance could help fire Trump. A group of congressional Democrats wants him to join a commission that could do exactly that if Trump is judged unfit. Tisdale says Vance will bide his time, but Trump's Iran fiasco and unhinged behavior are eroding support. And that hurts Vance, too.
Vance's lead over Marco Rubio for the 2028 nomination keeps slipping. When sycophants start plotting escape routes, the regime is rotting from the inside. Trump tries to pin a Medal of Honor on himself. Here's one for the history books. The Wall Street Journal reports Trump privately considered awarding himself the Medal of Honor, the highest military decoration this country gives. The man took 5 draft deferments during Vietnam. He never wore a uniform. Insiders say Trump panicked in early April after a U.S. fighter jet was shot down over Iran. He screamed at aides for hours, obsessed over the 1979 hostage crisis, and blamed the Europeans. Gas prices averaged $4.09 a day. Then he mused about pinning his own chest with the nation's highest military honor. Officials say he sometimes loses focus, drifting off to talk about the White House ballroom while soldiers die. A draft dodger dreaming up a medal for himself while the country burns? You can't make this stuff up. Why are middle-aged Americans falling apart? A new review in Current Directions in Psychological Science, uncovered something deeply wrong in America. Researchers at Arizona State, Brandeis, and 2 German universities tracked adults aged 50 to 65 across multiple countries. Americans in that group are lonelier, more depressed, with worse memory and weaker grip strength than earlier generations. Meanwhile, folks that aged in Northern Europe are actually getting healthier and happier. What's the difference? Europe invests in families. Cash transfers, paid parental leave, subsidized childcare. America doesn't. Healthcare here drains bank accounts. Wages stagnate. Adult kids can't afford to leave home. Aging parents need care. Income inequality keeps climbing. This isn't fate. Other wealthy nations made different choices, and their middle-aged citizens are thriving. We can, too. This suffering isn't inevitable. Could 2 minutes a day really save your life? Here's some really good news to end on. A new study from the European Heart Journal found that just 1 to 2 minutes a day of vigorous activity broken into short bursts lowers your risk of chronic disease and early death. Researchers called it VILPA, vigorous intermittent lifestyle physical activity. Sounds fancy. It's really just climbing stairs quickly, carrying heavy groceries, or hustling up a hill. Not a gym membership or a training plan, just moving with purpose. When you push harder, even briefly, your heart works, your muscles work briefly, and your mitochondria multiply. That builds strength and resilience. The older we get, the more we need intensity, not less. Avoiding it only speeds the decline of dread. So take the stairs, walk faster, and your future self will thank you. And that's the way it is today, Monday, April 20th, 2026. I'm Tom Hartman. Did you know that every weekday we send out an email before the show giving you all the topics coming up so you can be fully informed and ready to interact with our program? Or that after the show we send out Sue's Stack, a list of every topic I've discussed along with clickable hot links to every source of information I've shared with you on the air? It's all completely free and available over at tom.tv, T-H-O-M.tv. Check it out.
So as I mentioned, Trump on his Nazi-infested social media site is playing Frank Sinatra's song My Way about his role with the war in Iran. There you go.
And now the stage is set, the lights all glow. A voice declares, I'll run the show. No quiet steps, no careful plan. Just power held in one man's hand. They built the path with wealth and flame. Turned fear and fury into gain. Old rules bent slow, then snapped in two. A different kind of truth breaks through. What once was shared, now tightly owned. A louder voice, a colder tone. I did it my way, no compromise. With iron will and sharpened eyes. Through storms
what it cost. The world may say I have gone too far, but I became exactly what they are. Yes, power stayed, come what may, I ruled it all.
That's marvelous. 36 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Picking up your calls here, Kirk and or Ken in Kirkland, Washington. Hey, Ken, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm 88 years old, and I had a career in direct sales. And some of the things that Trump is doing nothing but using scare tactics on people that I would have been in so much trouble had I did that when I sold vacuum cleaners and fire alarms to people in their homes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strategy that, you know, the insurance industry used to use and sort of is now. You know, what'll happen if your husband dies? But yeah, I think you're right, Ken. I think you're right.
Well, there is always a stigma attached to what I did. I worked on a road crew. I worked all through northern Canada mm-hmm. in small communities.
Yeah.
And I found that, and there's always somebody that wants to take you on because we were always, our crew was, in their minds, was somebody in the community thought that we were there to rape and plunder.
Yeah.
That's just the reputation the business had.
I think, though,
in the business that take advantage of people to make their money.
Yeah.
And there's people in the business that help people make their money.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
That's the difference.
I think there's a noble tradition in direct sales. When my earliest memories, you know, when I was 4, 5, 6 years old, my dad was selling vacuum cleaners, Rexair vacuum cleaners, and World Book Encyclopedias door to door.
Rainbows.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a certain nobility. He was quite proud of what he was doing. He believed in both products. You know, fortunately, when I was 7, he got a job in a tool and die shop, and suddenly he was in a union, and all of a sudden, boom, we moved from a little one-room house into an actual house. You know, we joined the middle class. And I, you know, when I was 15, I think, I sold magazines door-to-door. You know, I had a paper route too.
The magazines they used to run put me through college. Thing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So you know, I think that there's a certain nobility to sales. But what Trump has done, and we've seen this with videos of Ivanka Trump, you know, telling lies about the condos that she was selling and things like this. You know, these guys are just, you know, third-rate hustlers. They're not. They give salespeople a bad name. And I think it's real unfortunate. Ken, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. That's a great insight. Hunter in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Hunter, what's on your mind today?
Right. Rabbi Hartman, yeah. My progressive political guru.
That would be an honor, actually.
Let's see. I have a little... Putin, Netanyahu, and Trump are the satanic trinity. And the bumper sticker could be TNT. They are the Antichrist. Mm-hmm. Okay, but I called you back in November, but Jefferson was on the show. Mm-hmm. On November 14th, 2001, Herbert Walker Bush and Putin met at Rice University. So that's 2 months after 9/11. They met at Rice University. Mm-hmm. And as far as I'm concerned, that was the New World Order. Right.
Oh, interesting. There. Interesting.
And that's historic. And yeah. Anyway, but Herbert Walker Bush became the CIA director by lying to Congress. He lied when a church asked him if he was in the CIA, and he said he wasn't. But the last release of JFK stuff, they had a thing called WU/Selene and WU/Briney. One of them was where Herbert Walker Bush and his partner, Thomas Devine, they went to Iran in 1950, you know, before the Shah came back in. They both went there. And then in 1968, they both went to Vietnam right before the Tet Offensive.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. Was it him or was it his son who owns Zapata Oil, where the only drilling operation that they had was just off the coast of Cuba and the Bay of Pigs invasion. It was called Operation Zapata. It was either H.W. or George W. Bush who owned that oil company. And everybody, I think in retrospect, knows that they weren't really drilling for oil. It was a listening station for the CIA.
Yes, he definitely was.
That was H.W.?
The one who did that. That's H.W. Bush.
Yeah, that was my
memory.
And then
it's no coincidence that his son ended up being the governor of Florida, which was the station chief of the CIA for the Cuban operation.
That's correct.
And then he put in W, so you can see where it's all domino effect.
Yeah, amazing. We used to call him the Bush crime family. Now we got the Trump crime family. I mean, we've gone from, aristocratic, well-spoken, sort of decent neo-fascist plutocrats running our country to a crude, megamaniacal neo-fascist billionaire running our country. It's amazing. Hunter, I got to move along with thanks. Thanks for pointing that out. Mike in Fairfax, Virginia. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom. I'm retired analyst Mike on Substack. I'm a retired Pentagon Iran analyst. But I want to talk, first of all, about our referendum here in Virginia to redraw our congressional districts. Mm-hmm. Last week, I talked to about 1,000 voters a day for about 8 days. And the Trump voters are all in for Trump's war. And I try to get our campaign to make this an anti-war referendum because we've really muddled the message. We're basically saying we want to level the playing field. At the same time, the Republicans are saying they want fair maps. Mm-hmm. And basically, their literature shows Spanberger and Obama, and our literature shows Spanberger and Obama.
Yeah.
And all their literature is targeted at the black community, saying that this redrawing the map will take away minority rights. Except the minority that they're concerned about are not black voters, but are Republicans.
They're wealthy white Republicans, yeah. Yeah, right. if they're really concerned about fair maps, they need to have a conversation with Greg Abbott.
Right, they keep telling me, no.
And Ron DeSantis.
It should only be Virginia. So I wanted to make it on the war, because I knew we had over 60% vote against the war. And I basically said, from Trump's own speech of April 1st, the nuclear sites that we obliterated with B-2 bombers have been hit so hard it would take months to get near the nuclear dust. Mm. That's the key, months. You cannot have a weapon in 2 weeks if you cannot get access to
the material. Oh, he's lying through his teeth.
Months.
He's figured out that his followers, his MAGA cult members, are so stupid or poorly informed or living within the Fox News bubble. They're so out of it that he can tell them anything, and they applaud him. I mean, we saw that this weekend. It's pathetic, frankly.
Yes, it's absolutely horrible. And then he has another statement. If we see them make a move, well, that means they haven't made a move yet.
And we
can definitely delay that. It's ridiculous, but they don't get this. But the news media has to really talk about this.
Yeah, no, the media is and this has been true of Trump ever since he started criticizing Obama for being a secret Kenyan. They never have actually called out Trump for doing what he does, for lying, for being an absolute pathological liar. Mike, thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be right back with more of your calls in just a moment. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. Stick around. And welcome back, Brad in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Hey, Brad, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, sorry, this is a dumb question, but can you explain what is the difference between Citizens United and the Buckley, and which one was worse?
Oh, that's a great question. There were a series of three. I mean, you could add McCutcheon in there, which was kind of a fine-tuning of Citizens United, but basically three decisions. Arguably four decisions that brought us to this moment. The first was not actually a Supreme Court decision. In 1886, the railroads argued before the Supreme Court that they should have rights under the 14th Amendment to equal protection under the law. They said that they were being taxed at one property tax rate in Santa Clara County and a different tax rate in Santa Ana County, and that was a violation of their constitutional right as persons. The Supreme Court shot that down, but in the head note to that decision, the clerk of the court, John Chandler Mancroft Davis, wrote that the Chief Justice, Morrison Remick Waite, had said that corporations are, in fact, persons and entitled to protections under the 14th Amendment. So that kind of established the beginning of this whole corporate personhood thing. And that's what my new book, which will be out on July 7th, is all about, who killed the American dream, the greatest crime story never told. So that's where it started. Then we fast forward to 1976, when William F. Buckley's brother, James Buckley, very, very wealthy guy, multi-millionaire, wants to run for the Senate from Connecticut, and he wants to fund his own campaign, but he's limited to only $3,000 by the laws that were passed under the Nixon administration, or after the Nixon scandals. And so the Supreme Court ruled that an individual running for political office can use his own money on an essentially unlimited basis. So that was in 76, and they used the argument that money can be free speech, that it's a form of free speech, that this is a free speech expression of this particular candidate, in this case, James Buckley. 2 years later, in a decision that was written by Lewis Powell himself, the author of the Powell memo, the Supreme Court ruled in a case that involved First National Bank of Boston that a corporation similarly could spend unlimited amounts of money on political campaigns, even if it didn't involve the corporation itself. So those set the kind of baseline that allowed the fossil fuel industry to pour millions into Reagan's election in 1980. And it started this whole thing of the Republican Party recruiting very, very wealthy people, like Rick Scott down in Florida. He made hundreds of millions of dollars in the largest Medicare fraud in history with a hospital chain that he owned. And he used that money to become a senator, first the governor and then a senator. So that's when the Republican Party started doing that. So then in 2010, the people who published the movie Citizens United about Hillary, they sued. And the Supreme Court, John Roberts, actually said, bring this back to us again, only make it more expansive. And that's when they really blew the doors open. And so Citizens United is really the fundamental evil, where they just amplified both of those and said, we're basically doing away with all limits. Make sense?
And do any other developed countries allow that, or is it just
no? To the best of my knowledge, there are no other developed countries in the world, or advanced democracies, I guess would be the way to say it, that allow this. None, to the best of my knowledge. You may find an exception and correct me on that, but I don't think you will. It's been a few years since I did the research on that one. Brad, thank you for the call. It's great to hear from you. 49 minutes past the hour. And basically with Clarence Thomas, he was the deciding vote in Citizens United. What he did was he legalized the bribery of judges and politicians. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. So what do we call the really, really mind-bogglingly rich? At the founding of the Republic, they were referred to as speculators or moneyed interest or aristocrats. In the years leading up to the Civil War, we called them the cotton lords and the plantation aristocracy. In the late 19th century, they were the robber barons. In the 1930s, FDR called them the economic royalists. But since the Reagan Revolution, we've just called them billionaires. And now, some of them want to call themselves tech bros. Like, that's kind of a good thing, like tech is positive and bros, like Mark Zuckerberg saying we need more masculine energy in American business culture. So we need a new phrase. I would like to suggest the morbidly rich. Morbidly suggests unhealthy. And the vast riches that some of these people have is unhealthy to our democracy, particularly since five Republicans on the Supreme Court said that morbidly rich people can buy politicians. And it's unhealthy for them, too. So morbidly rich. There's an op-ed over at HartmanReport.com all about it. Check it out. Welcome back. Picking up your calls. Here's Susie in Willits, California. Hey, Susie, what's up?
Greetings, Tom.
Hey.
I just want to talk about what I heard on the weekend show on MS Now,
mm-hmm.
And it was astounding how much money the Trump family has made in the White House.
Yeah, and I mean, just in the last year, Trump's made over $5 billion, and Kushner's gotten $6 billion, I think.
I know. So why are they getting all this money? And, okay, we're sending, you know, three ding-dongs to Pakistan that have no experience with diplomacy, how to negotiate, educated. I mean, they're just ding-dongs. And who is this Jared Kushner? We didn't elect him.
Yeah.
And he's all part of this whole Saudi Arabia scheme. And, you know, it's just, it's to be, you know, redundant, corrupt. And why isn't anything done about it? I mean, did Obama make $4 million in the office?
The Article 1, Section 9, Clause 8 of the U.S. Constitution prohibits any person holding a government office from accepting any present, emolument, office, or title from any king, prince, or foreign state without the consent of Congress. I mean, these guys are just breaking the law. It's that simple.
This is all novel, but they're not, you know, that's not happening.
Yeah, yeah, no, and, it's a crime. They're committing crimes right in front of us.
These three ding-dongs are, they have no diplomacy
experience. Yeah.
They don't know about the business and the culture of Iran. And Vance, even on the show the weekend, Vance was out, and Jackie, one of the commentators, actually got Trump on the phone. And she said, is J.D. Vance in or out? He said, oh, he's out. And then about an hour later, oh, now he's in.
Yeah,
like
it's crazy.
The straight open,
it's the gang that can't shoot straight, Susie. We've got a Nepo baby president. You know, who is promoting all, it's pathetic. It's just pathetic. Susie, I got to move along. Thank you for the call. Jerry in Tampa. Hey, Jerry, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was calling up about the closing of the Strait of Hormuz.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when Iran said they would open the Strait of Hormuz, that was conditioned upon this so-called blockade that the U.S. was doing, that they had to get rid of that.
That's correct. It was also conditioned on the United States honoring the ceasefire, the 10-day ceasefire, which included a suspension of Israeli bombing of Lebanon, which Israel refused to do.
Yeah, and not only that, but what's this about the U.S. firing on an Iranian ship? I think that also nulls and voids anything like a ceasefire.
Yeah, I think that's going to be... I mean, you know, these guys are like, they made a really serious offer, a genuine offer. They went a long way toward making a real offer to the United States. And apparently Kushner and Witkoff didn't understand what was being offered because they know nothing about nuclear physics or how bombs are made, which is why Obama had, I think it was Ernest Moniz, you know, his energy secretary. I'm not sure who it was. But anyhow, Obama had nuclear scientists on his negotiating team. These guys just don't know what they're doing. And so Iran offers a genuine good faith, you know, hey, we'll go halfway down the road to look at what we're offering. And what do? They kill 50 of the leaders of Iran. Twice now. Twice while we were in the middle of negotiating with them, we started bombing them. So now they're saying, you know, we're not sure we're going to show up, guys. We're not going to show up.
Comment. If you were talking about J.D. Vance and his hopeful presidential run,
mm-hmm.
all I can say is he better not make the same mistake that Hubert Humphrey made in '68. The reason, and a lot of historians have agreed with that, is that Humphrey was too slow to distance himself from Johnson on the war
That's
in
right.
Vietnam.
You're absolutely right. Well, actually, what had happened was in August of '68. They had, and this was an election year for people who aren't old enough to remember. It was the, you know, Hubert Humphrey was running against, Richard Nixon? And in August of 68, Lyndon Johnson and Hubert Humphrey, who was negotiating, had actually worked out a peace deal with North Vietnam. And it was going to take effect in September or October, and they referred to it as an October surprise. Well, the Nixon crew got wind of this, and they reached out to the South Vietnamese leadership and said, don't go along with that deal, and we'll make you rich. We'll get you a lot of money. And so the South Vietnamese refused to go to the talks in Paris. You may remember that, you know, where they started out debating what shape the table should be. And, you know, that was the end of that. So Nixon, committed sabotage. He committed treason to win that 68 election, and that's how Humphrey got screwed. So, you know,
Burns didn't talk about that.
Yeah, they should have announced that peace deal much earlier is the bottom line. I mean, you know, because they were left with LBJ calling up Everett Dirksen, the Republican leader in the Senate, and complaining that it was treason, and Everett Dirksen saying, yes, it is treason, and I'll call Richard Nixon and see if I can get him to change. And he calls Nixon. We got a recording of that one, too. And Nixon just BS's him. So, I mean, ever since Nixon, every single Republican president has been elected on the basis of treason or electoral theft. I mean, none of them have been legitimately elected. The last legitimately elected Republican president was Dwight Eisenhower, in my humble opinion, and I can back that up. Jerry, I'm out of time. I'm sorry. I got to run. But thank you for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Tom Hartman here, and while we're taking a break from the program, I wanted to share a little update about the X-Ray Spring Pledge Drive. Right now, there's a special challenge match available just during my show. That's right. Every gift we receive until the end of this program will be doubled. So give now and have your money count twice. X-Ray is a community platform, and it only exists with listener support. That's you. So if you love that I'm on the air in Portland, visit xray.fm or call the pledge line at 503-233-9729. That's 503-233-X-RAY. And pledge your support now. Supporting community stations during their pledge drive is the best way to help. So answer the call and pledge your support today.
This is Bird Note. In the environmental movement, no single figure stands taller than Rachel Carson. Her work on DDT helped spark an environmental awakening in the 1960s. Some consider Rachel Carson the finest nature writer of the 20th century. In addition to Silent Spring, books such as The Sea Around Us and Under the Sea Wind are evidence of her exquisite literary talent. Carson herself had inspiration from a 19th century writer named Richard Jefferies. His prose poems, like The Pageant of Summer, reveal a profound immersion in nature and a joyful sense of discovery. His work helped Carson develop and write about her own deep sense of connection with the natural world. Here's Jefferies on Summer. Every blade of grass, each leaf, each separate floret and petal is a